All right. Welcome to another episode of Speaking of Gothic. I apologize for not dropping an episode last week because I was sick. I got the croup. Not COVID, but I got something, so it took me out most of the week. But here's your episode, and this is one I'm really excited for. It's one of my favorite movies, and I believe it was number two on my list that I started in the very first episode back in November of 2022. I'm going to talk today about Bram Stoker's Dracula, directed by the great Francis Ford Coppola from 1992. Just to give you a recap on this one, it stars Gary Oldman as Dracula, Winona Ryder as Mina Harker, Keanu Reeves as Jonathan Harker, Cary Elwes as Sir Arthur Holmwood, and Sir Anthony Hopkins as the great Abraham Van Helsing. And for this one, I say it's Dracula in all his gothic romantic glory. I mean, I think I mentioned that I called it a sumptuous feast of gothic horror for the eyes and senses. And actually, it's gothic horror and gothic romance. And in some episode, maybe a future episode, I'm going to kind of talk about the differences between gothic horror and gothic romance, the differences and the similarities and where they intersect. But for right now, if you've been living under a rock, maybe you've never heard of Dracula, but I think even most little kids have heard of Dracula, at least the name, and they have an image of what he looks like, and it's usually the Bela Lugosi version, which, from 1931, I'm not a fan of Bela Lugosi's version. I thought he was over the top. He's not my definitive Dracula. Maybe it's because I was young when I saw that, and maybe because I also grew up in the age of the Hammer horror films, the Dracula films starring Christopher Lee. But for me, this Dracula is my favorite Dracula. This interpretation of the story, the novel, and the way it was played by Gary Oldman under Francis Ford Coppola's direction, I think was just stellar. And if you don't know who Francis Ford Coppola is, again, you're probably living under a rock, but he is the person who directed The Godfather Part 2, probably one of the best sequels in movie history. Apocalypse Now, and many other films. So, fantastic director, and this is his first and only foray into horror, from what I understand. And this movie is based on the novel written by Bram Stoker, which was published in 1897. And it's one that I have, that I own, and I've read Dracula probably once or twice. Probably every other year, maybe every 2 years, I bring it out when I'm feeling nostalgic and I want some old-fashioned gothic horror, and I read that. And there's differences between the novel and this movie interpretation, mainly the insertion of the love story, the romance, the gothic romance that Francis Ford Coppola inserted for his story. And, of course, the screenwriter, James V. Hart, who's fantastic. But let me read the description synopsis for this movie. Count Dracula, a 15th century prince, is condemned to live off the blood of the living for eternity. Young lawyer Jonathan Harker is sent to Dracula's castle to finalize a land deal, and when the count sees a photo of Harker's fiancée, Mina, which is the splitting image of his dead wife, he imprisons Jonathan and sets off for London to track her down. Now this is, again, different from the book, but I think it fleshes out the story well. Because I think it's the perfect marriage between the romantic and the horrific, and then bonded by the gothic. I mean, there's so much to love about this movie that it's going to take me a while to get through everything. But Christopher Lee's version differed in the Hammer films because he was more of an outright monster. You know, he had blood red eyes, long fangs. He hissed like a cat. He had very little dialogue. I think of the 7 or 8 films that he did. I can't remember how many films that there are. I think he had dialogue in maybe the first one, where he had dialogue throughout, and then in maybe one of the later ones, the ones in the 70s, I think. But he was an outright monster. He had no remorse, no pity. Humans were his food source, and that was that. But the Dracula that Coppola and Oldman created was sympathetic. He was a warrior prince who renounced God because of the death of his beloved wife, Elizabetha. And even though I wasn't married when the movie came out, I felt his pain and his rage, and I feel it more so now because I've been married for 21 years. So now I understand why he was so angry at God and why he was so enraged. And I felt empathy for him, even though, you know, he killed a bunch of victims without a second thought, because of what I see, that, you know, he had this sense of passion for the reincarnated love of his life, which was Mina Harker. In talking about Dracula, I think it's important to kind of mention that there have been hundreds of film adaptations. I mean, literally hundreds of them. So I'm going to kind of cover those briefly, just to kind of mention some of these things. So when I was writing the script for this, because I always try to have some sort of script and outline that I follow, I looked up Dracula adaptations, you know, on Google, because, you know, Google knows everything. And I went to the Internet Movie Database, IMDb for short. And on that site, you can find anything you want to know about any movie. And I was really, really, really surprised. I mean, I knew there were a lot of adaptations, but I was really astounded. So these are just some of the adaptations. But I'm not going to read every single one of these, but I'm just going to kind of list some of these. Starting in 1921, Dracula's Death. Now, I never even heard of this movie, and I don't know. I think, based on the names, which I cannot pronounce, it seems like maybe it's a Polish film, possibly some Eastern European version. Again, 1921. It was 65 minutes. If you don't know this, there was a time when movies were actually under 2 hours. I know that's crazy to believe, because now everything's like 2.5 hours, even comedies. So the next one is Nosferatu. And I think a lot of you, especially probably you film fans and you horror fans, have heard of Nosferatu. Came out in 1922. This was interesting because this was an adaptation of Dracula, but they did not have permission or the rights to actually do an adaptation of Dracula. And I believe Bram Stoker's widow either sued them or something, to where they had to change the story. So instead of calling the Count Dracula, they called him Count Orlok. But it's basically the same story. And it was directed by the great F.W. Murnau, who also did... was it Metropolis? You know what? I'm not going to say, because I don't know. But it starred Max Schreck. And if you have not seen this version, this is the one where Count Orlok is bald. He has long fingers with talons. He casts these crazy shadows. And it is one of those films that was made in the what they now call the impressionistic style. Very stark, black and white. These beautiful painted sets. But it's basically Dracula, the story of Dracula. And I'm not going to read all of these, but now here's another one. Dracula, 1931, starring Bela Lugosi. That's the one that most people know. There was also another one made at the same time, Dracula, 1931, in Spanish. Here's an interesting fact. Todd Browning directed the Bela Lugosi adaptation of Dracula in 1931. George Melford directed the Spanish version, and they used the exact same sets. And what happened was, the Spanish version, when the American or British or whatever this is, when that version by Todd Browning, they were filming during the day, the sets were still standing. And then at night, the Spanish version filmed on the exact same sets, and they filmed the exact same story, but in Spanish. Now, I've never seen the Spanish version, but I've seen clips of it, because I watch a lot of horror behind the scenes sort of things. And it actually looks way better than the 1931 version. And I think it's better acted. Carlos Villarias, I think, is Count Dracula. And he is phenomenal. You know, just the little bits that I've seen. So I think it's a much better version. So if you don't mind looking at subtitles, and I think I'm going to go back to that one, because I tried to watch Dracula recently and I just couldn't get through it. But anyway, there it is. Here's another one. Mark of the Vampire, 1935. Here's one that I really am going to see. And I think it's on Tubi right now. Tubi, if you don't know, is a streaming service like Netflix and all that. It's lower end. It's kind of like what Netflix used to be when they carried all these crazy original movies and old movies. But Tubi has Dracula's Daughter, I believe. I thought I saw it maybe last week listed on there. And this one is about the Countess. I'm assuming it's Dracula's daughter, because it says, when Countess Myra Zaleski appears in London, mysterious events occur, leading Dr. Von Helsing, V-O-N instead of V-A-N, to believe the Countess must be a vampire. Pretty great. Here's another one, 1943, Son of Dracula. Here's another one, House of Dracula, 1944. House of Dracula, 1945. That's crazy. House of the Wolfman, 2009. I don't know why this showed up in here. This is really stupid. But I think these are all ones that have Dracula either as the main character or as a character. Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. Fantastic movie. Love this. I think the Wolfman's in this one as well. Dracula in Istanbul, 1953. Blood of Dracula, 1957. There's a lot of them here. The Return of Dracula, 1958. Now here's where it gets interesting. Also in 1958, The Horror of Dracula. This is the first Hammer film with Dracula where it stars Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee. Peter Cushing is Von Helsing, Christopher Lee is Count Dracula. And this is the one where he has dialogue. Here's another one. The Brides of Dracula, 1960. Curse of the Blood Ghouls, 1962. This is a crazy one here. Batman Dracula, 1964. I don't even know what to say about that. But Andy Warhol, that crazy artist, directed this one. I didn't even know this existed. This one's my favorite. Dracula, Prince of Darkness. This is the one where he was just outright evil. Christopher Lee, again, I think it's the second Hammer film. And directed by Terrence Fisher. And this is fantastic. I love it because I think there was more action. I believe there was more blood in this one as well. But it was a great, great, great movie. Here's a crazy one. Billy the Kid versus Dracula, 1966. Batman fights Dracula, 1967. A Taste of Blood, 1967. These are all crazy. The Fearless Vampire Killers, 1967. This is an interesting one because it was directed by Roman Polanski. And I'm going to say about Roman Polanski, I've seen his films. He also directed Rosemary's Baby and some other ones. I don't like to watch his films, and you can look up and see why things that, you know, that have happened with Roman Polanski. So I just choose not to watch his films. But this one was pretty cool because it's kind of a horror comedy. And I don't know if they actually mentioned Dracula in this, but I know there's a Dracula-esque person in this. But here's the synopsis for The Fearless Vampire Killers. A noted professor, probably Van Helsing, and his dim-witted apprentice fall prey to their inquiring vampires while on the trail of the ominous damsel in distress. Yeah, it's crazy. Here's another one. Dracula Has Risen from the Grave, 1968, also starring Christopher Lee. And I believe this was the third film, if I'm keeping track. Blood of Dracula's Castle, 1969. Dracula, the Dirty Old Man, 1969. Yeah, I'm going to leave that one right there. Count Dracula, starring Christopher Lee. I think this is the fourth Hammer film, I believe. Wait a minute. This is an Italian version because it's the director is Jesus Franco. I think they call it Jess Franco. And also stars Christopher Lee. So this one actually was not an official Hammer version, but I think it's the fourth one that Christopher Lee starred in. Crazy. Count Yorga, Vampire, 1970. Jonathan, 1970. This is a crazy movie. The Taste of the Blood of Dracula, number 5. Again, if you're keeping count, this is also Christopher Lee. This one, I think it is a Hammer film. I'm pretty sure. Scars of Dracula, 1970. Also starring Christopher Lee. So that's 6. At least 6 with Christopher Lee as Dracula. Dracula versus Frankenstein, 1971. Here's a crazy one. Vampiros Lesbos. Vampire lesbians, basically. And also directed by Jess Franco, 1971. Dracula AD. This is the 7th film. I'm sorry. Dracula AD, 1972. Made it in 1972. It's the 7th one with Christopher Lee. I think. And Peter Cushing is in this one. This one's funny because I remember watching this and I didn't know what the heck was going on. It says Johnny Alucard races Count Dracula from the dead in London in 1972, and the Count goes after the descendants of Van Helsing. So I think in this one, Peter Cushing is playing a descendant, or the descendant, one of the descendants of Van Helsing. Here's an all-time favorite, and at some point in time, I'm going to talk about this one. Blackula, directed by William Crane and starring William Marshall. And if you don't know about Blackula, it is probably in the peak of the blaxploitation period, where Shaft and Superfly and all these other movies came out, movies with Jim Brown and a lot of other prominent black actors, where, yeah, there were exploitation pieces, but they also allowed black actors to work and have starring roles and to be in front of and behind the camera. And in Blackula, William Marshall, he's fantastic. So in this one, here's the synopsis. An ancient African prince turned into a vampire by Dracula himself finds himself in modern Los Angeles. I'm definitely going to do an episode on this one because I want to talk about more how people of color, blacks, Latino, etc., are represented in horror films. And that'll probably be its own thing. But I think the first one that I'll do will be about Blackula. But I love this film. The sequel, I think it's called Blackula Goes to Africa or something. That it was not good. But this one is a classic. It's a gothic classic. And I like it because, similar to if you've ever watched any of Kolchak the Night Stalker, either the two TV movies with Darren McGavin or the series, which I was a big fan of and which also influenced the X-Files later on, you'll see that this is where they transport Dracula or a Dracula-esque character, you know, from his gothic environment into the modern day world. And in this one, without spoiling, because remember, I never spoil anything, but in this one, Count Dracula turns this African prince into a vampire and curses him. And then, of course, he has to have blood. And then I think there's also, he sees like his reincarnated wife, who was the princess. And he, you know, he's fascinated by her. She was played by Vanette McGee, who was a great actress. But I'll talk about Blackula at some point in time in its own show. Moving on, Count Dracula's Great Love, 1973. Oh, here's the other one. I'm sorry, I got the name wrong. Scream, Blackula, Scream, 1973. And the prince, Mamawaldi, it was his name, Prince Mamawaldi, is stirred by African voodoo and is forced to kill again. Again, this one, it wasn't that great. It wasn't that great. All right, another one. The Hanging Woman, 1973. The She Butterfly, 1973 TV movie. Again, these are all Dracula movies or that have the Dracula character or a Dracula-esque character. And the reason I'm going through all these is because I want you to see how the novel influenced all these different interpretations. Then we'll bend back and we'll go to Bram Stoker's Dracula, 1992. Here's one more. The Dracula Saga, 1973. Satanic Rites of Dracula, 1973, and this stars again Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing. So I think this is number 8. I'm trying to keep count on my fingers. I should be writing this down, but the synopsis for this one. In the 1970s, again, they transport the gothic to the modern. Scotland Yard believed it had uncovered a case of vampirism. They call in veteran vampire researcher Professor Lorimer Van Helsing, a descendant of Dr. Van Helsing. So I'm wondering if this film and the last Peter Cushing one, if they are connected, or if you can watch them, Dracula 80, and then watch the Satanic Rites of Dracula and see if there's any sort of connection, if there's the same character played by Peter Cushing. I don't know. Maybe you could. That'd be a nice little connection. Son of Dracula, 1973. Blood for Dracula, 1974. The Big Scare, 1974. A TV movie starring Jack Palance, Dracula, which was pretty good. I mean, I tried to watch it last year. It was directed by Dan Curtis. Jack Palance played a savage vampire. You know, he had lots of dialogue. He seemed pretty feral in his approach to it. The only thing I didn't like about the movie was that it looked too much like a TV movie. And if you don't know anything about TV movies, like from the 70s and the 80s, they just had this weird static look because they were shot like TV of the time, where the framing is what they call the 4:3 ratio, where it's more square like a box. And I think I mentioned this in one of my episodes, versus a widescreen sort of effect. So if you look at movies nowadays, most of them seem to be shot with widescreen because they know that either it's in the cinemas or it just gives it more of a cinematic look. So this Dracula version, this 1974 TV movie, directed by Dan Curtis, and let me give you a little bit of history here. Dan Curtis, he's a great TV writer. I think he wrote for Twilight Zone and some other things, and he created Kolchak, The Night Stalker, both the TV movies. There was two TV movies. I think it was the first one was The Night Stalker, and then there was The Night Strangler. They both starred Darren McGavin as reporter Carl Kolchak. And then it led into a series. And I think the series only lasted one season. It was really great. I mean, because it was like a monster of the week where every episode, Darren McGavin was chasing a different kind of monster. And the first one, it was a vampire. So Dan Curtis knows his stuff, and he's a great writer. It's just the presentation. It just didn't work for me. But if you want to seek it out, I would say watch this version. Here's another one. Old Dracula, 1974. Alan and Rossi meet Dracula and Frankenstein, 1974, a comedy. Here's one from China. The Legend of the Seven Gold Vampires, 1974. Dracula and Son, 1974. Oh my goodness, this one stars Christopher Lee. I'm pretty sure that it does not follow the... I don't think it's Hammer, or if it is Hammer, I don't think it's like super connected to the other iterations that where Christopher Lee played Dracula. But is it 8 or 9? I've already lost count. Now here's another TV movie that it's pretty good. Count Dracula, 1977, and stars Louis Jordan. He played a really good Dracula. I remember this one, watching this one and thinking, oh, he's pretty good. He wasn't fierce. He was more suave and charming, which, you know, I guess that's fine if you want to see suave and charming in your Dracula, but I don't particularly want to. Here's some more. Dracula's Dog, 1977. You realize we haven't even got out of the 70s yet. Lady Dracula, 1977. Now we're in the 80s. Nope, not yet. Dr. Dracula, 1983. I don't know why they skipped this on IMDb. The words are all off. Maybe these are in order of how they were rated. Nosferatu, The Vampire. This one was directed by Werner Herzog and stars Klaus Kinski. He was great. This is an adaptation. It's a remake of the adaptation of Nosferatu, 1921. Yeah, there you have it. Nocturna, 1979. And here's one that I really remember liking back in the day. Dracula, 1979. Again, another Dracula movie, but this one directed by John Badham, who was a pretty good director. I'd say kind of a workman-like director, but stars Frank Langella and Laurence Olivier and Donald Pleasance from Halloween played Dr. Loomis and Kate Nelligan. This was a really good version. I mean, I think this was a really, really good version. And Frank Langella, you've probably seen him. If you look up his name, you've seen he's been an actor for a long time. But this version of Dracula, he was really suave and charming. But he also was savage. You know, he was still a monster. All right, so I think I'm going to end this little section with Love at First Bite. This is great. A comedy horror, and it's a spoof about Count Dracula moving to New York and finding his bride. And this stars George Hamilton, Susan St. James. It's pretty funny. It's a funny movie. I mean, I haven't watched it in a long time. But, no, there you go. That's a ton of Dracula movies. And I haven't even gotten to the bottom of this list yet because we're just now entering the 80s. But since we're talking about the 1992 version of Dracula, let's go back to that. Prior to Dracula getting all these film adaptations, there actually was a stage play. And which is interesting because the stage play was written by, I'm reading this from Wikipedia, an Irish actor and playwright, Hamilton Dean, in 1924, and then was revised by an American writer named John Balderson in 1927. And remember what I mentioned about Nosferatu 1921 being an unauthorized version of Dracula? Well, this stage play in 1927, was the first authorized adaptation of Bram Stoker's 1897 novel. So I just thought that was an interesting side note. So like I've done in subsequent episodes, I'm going to talk about the tropes, but I'm going to go a little bit deeper on probably on the environment on this. Obviously, this has elements of the grotesque, the supernatural, and or creatures. I mean, we're talking about vampires, and vampires are one of the most famous creatures or supernatural monsters, if you will, that have ever existed. You know, if you ask any small child what a werewolf is, they might or might not know. Ask them about Frankenstein's creation, they'll probably say, oh, it's Frankenstein, which, you know, that drives me crazy because Frankenstein was not the name of the creature. It was Frankenstein's creation, you know, but whatever. You could maybe call him Prometheus. But in this one, but if you ask a child, if you ask anybody who Dracula is, you're going to get probably more answers than you want. So moving on, let's talk about the Gothic environments, because I took heavy notes when I was rewatching this. And in this movie, it is filled with Gothic environments. The Romanian wilderness, Castle Dracula, Carfax Abbey, London, you know, there's crypts and cemeteries, even the Demeter sailing vessel, which transported Dracula from Transylvania to London, is its own Gothic environment. So I kind of think I need to break these down a little bit on their own individual level. So let's talk about Carfax Abbey. Oh, I do want to mention something. I was looking at my notes. This film differs from every other adaptation that I've seen in terms of the story. The original novel written by Bram Stoker, 1897, it is told in what they call the epistolary style. And if you don't know what that is, it means that the novel is told from different perspectives from the different characters, and it's a combination of journal entries, diaries, newspaper clippings, telegraphs, because obviously they had telegraphs back then. And it is all in the novel. Mina's writing a journal. I think Dr. Seward is writing a journal. And then there's, like I said, newspaper clippings and different things. So what it does, it kind of gives you a complete picture of what's happening in the events of the novel, that is inside the character's perspective, but also outside their perspective. Here's a little note to the side. Two years ago, I wrote an epistolary vampire novel set in 1862 Civil War Baltimore, when Baltimore declared martial law. And I used this exact style. And it's not easy to pull off, and I don't know if I was successful or not. But if you like that sort of thing, and you say, hey, I really like the epistolary style, and you know, it's an old-fashioned style, but I wanted to see if I could write in that style, similar to what Bram Stoker did. So if you want to check that out, look up Kevin L. Williams on Amazon, and the novel is called The Guardians, Baltimore, 1862. Little plug there. But this film is told in the epistolary style, and it's told the way Coppola frames it. There's narration. You can actually see words on the screen, like you'll see like a diary. And Jonathan Harker, he's sitting on the train, and he's writing about what's happening. And some of that is pulled directly from the novel. So kudos to James V. Hart for writing that, and kudos to Coppola for his beautiful direction of this. And then there's narration from the different characters. Like there's a couple times where we see Mina Harker, played by Winona Ryder. She's typing on a typewriter, but you know, there's voiceover, of course, because we, you know, as modern audiences, we're used to voiceover, and the voiceover is what Mina is writing in her diary. And then the same thing, Dr. Seward, does the same thing. He runs the Carfax Abbey, the lunatic asylum, and he's the doctor there. And basically, he's narrating parts of it. So the narration stands in for his notes and his diary, which is in the book. But talking about Carfax Abbey, it's a dark, despairing place, and this is where Renfield is kept. And I can't remember if it was the same in the novel. I wish I knew, but Renfield, the character in the movie, was the solicitor, which is a lawyer who went to Transylvania originally to talk to Dracula about doing business with him, and then he went crazy, and I guess Dracula, you know, made him his slave or whatever, and then he came back and they institutionalized him. So getting back to the environments, the beginning, it opens up, there's a train ride that Jonathan Harker, well, there, some other things happen, but Jonathan Harker is a young lawyer, and he's sent to Transylvania because Renfield, you know, is in an asylum now. So he's sent there to deal with Dracula because they think he's just a man who wants to buy property in London. So when Jonathan Harker is on the train, you get these wonderful bits of Jonathan Harker writing to Mina in his diary, and he's talking about what's happening. And this is very similar to the novel. When I was reading the novel, I was thinking back to the movie, and I went, wow, you know what? This is really great. They really did a wonderful job of adapting what was on the page. And the train ride, to me, as I rewatched it, it's very reminiscent of the old Hammer films that I mentioned earlier. And the style that Coppola filmed the movie in is similar to a stage play almost. And that's why I wanted to mention about the stage play, because it's weird. And I'm sure, obviously, they did their research, so they knew there was a stage play, but it's like an opera / stage play. I think the only thing missing is the characters singing. Although, you know, if they sang, I think it would probably work the way Coppola directed it. But the film kind of treads the line more than most gothic films between gothic horror and gothic romance. The horror comes from the violence that Dracula, of course, does, that he inflicts, and that the vampire hunters inflict, and which is very interesting to note. So again, I'm not going to tell you everything, but there are some scenes where the vampire hunters go after Dracula and his little merry band of vampires, and Coppola does not shy away from the blood, which is, you know, if you're a horror fan, you love that kind of thing. And it was, I think it worked. It wasn't overly grotesque, but it was bloody enough to where you realize, okay, there's real consequences here. And then on the Demeter, the ship that I mentioned, Dracula, he kills the entire crew. Now, you never see this. You see hints of this in the movie. The book is the same. Actually, in the book, the events are just alluded to because, as I mentioned once earlier, I think it was a ship's log where the captain or the first mate was talking about events happening. Oh, and they did that in the film. They had a voiceover that Anthony Hopkins as Van Helsing actually read the voiceover, but he talked about what the ship's mate, first mate was experiencing, where people were going missing. He wasn't sure if they were thrown over the side or whatever, but we know, the audience knows that Dracula is feeding on these people so he can stay alive during the voyage. And there also, I heard that there is a movie called Last Voyage of the Demeter, and it's been in development for a long time, and I don't know, I think it's supposed to come out in 2023, but we'll keep an eye out for that. But in the first part of this film, I think it's a nice juxtaposition between the journals that Mina Harker and Jonathan are writing. I think it's really wonderful. Again, going back to the epistolary style, it's fabulous. Let's talk about Dracula's castle. It is your, I would say, typical gothic environment. I love the castle. It is tall and ominous. Actually, wait, let me go back before that. After Jonathan Harker gets off the train, and I'm kind of trying to do this in a logical sequence, and again, I don't want to give away everything, but you have to see the film for yourself. The ride, Jonathan gets off the train and then he takes a carriage and it drops him off at a spot. And when the carriage drops him off, there are some gypsies inside and they're telling him, basically they say something like, for the dead travel fast, which I believe was a line from the movie. Basically, they're trying to warn him like, hey, don't go to this place because it's cursed and something bad's going to happen to you, which of course it does. But the environment is so wonderful because there's fog and mist on the ground. If you remember, I mentioned that once before, that is an element of the gothic, of the aesthetic, where there's dark woods and you can't see, and you know there's creatures around and there's wolves. And when Jonathan Harker is waiting for the next carriage to pick him up to take him to Dracula's castle, it's surreal and eccentric, and I love the way that they shot this, and it's in slow motion, and as he's riding, he looks outside the carriage window, the driver's not saying anything, and you look down and they're on a sheer drop off with the carriage wheels just hugging to the road, and then they pull back for a wide shot where you see the carriage is tiny and you see Dracula's castle, which is enormous, and it towers over everything. And this is something that I noticed when I watched it. I can't believe as many times as I've seen this film, I can't believe I never noticed that the first shot of Dracula's castle, it looks like an old man sitting on a throne with talons looking down. And maybe it's just me. I mean, but I'd never noticed that before. But this time I saw it and I paused it and I was like, oh my goodness, that is crazy. And again, Francis Ford Coppola, he's a genius. And I think, I'm hoping that that was intentional, because I noticed it, but it took me many, many times of watching this film to finally catch that. And I do want to mention that the movie is actually, it's quite erotic in places. When Jonathan Harker, he's kept a prisoner, like he does his business with Dracula, and then he finally realizes, oh, wait a minute, there's something really wrong here. And then Dracula tells him, after a bunch of weird things that happen, Dracula tells him, he said, you know, you can wander around, but if there's a locked door, basically don't go there because something might happen. Sure enough, what does he do? He picks a lock, goes inside, and he meets the three brides of Dracula. And he lays down on this, it looks like a bed, and they come up out of nowhere, out of the ground, and they're semi-nude, and it's very sensuous, very erotic, but also very disturbing, because then they begin to bleed him. Spoiler, they don't kill him. But I will say that the way that they feed on him is pretty disturbing. I was surprised I was so disturbed after I watched it. But it was amazing as well. Thank you for listening to part one of my discussion about Bram Stoker's Dracula from 1992. Part two will air next Sunday. And if you like this content and you like this show, consider leaving a review wherever you listen to your podcast. And if you like gothic horror or gothic romance, please check out some of my novels. You can look up Kevin L. Williams, use the L. And I have my gothic horror novels up there, and I just started a new gothic romance series. So if you're into reading and you're into that sort of thing, please check it out and purchase a copy. Shameless plug. And as always, fellow gothics, thank you for listening, and be kind to one another. Bye-bye.